Cal Bates is the new MP recently elected to the electorate of Whanganui. We're here in the government caucus room, and it's been more than 10 years since I've seen you, Cal, other than since you've been an MP running into you in passing. But exactly. First came across you, I think, during the Mark Blumsky campaign back in 2005.
Yeah, so I think I was chair of the Wellington Central National Party during that time. Just after Mark Blumsky got elected, I became the chair of the Wellington Central National Party. Yeah, so been a while, eh, Jordan?
Well, so let's catch up. You've been up to a lot. And as prepping for this interview, I like to come up with a little bit of a paragraph on who you are or what you're about.
This will be interesting.
But I thought that your wife bent me to it. Quoting from your maiden, Candace tells me my life and career is not one that can be easily expressed in an elevator pitch. It sounds like an interviewer's worst nightmare. But here goes. I've been an employer and an employee, am a landlord and tenant, driver of a diesel vehicle, and simultaneously a diligent recycler. A queen, scout, and a child of God. I love cooking and red wine, am chartered accountant, and have authored 2 books. You grew up in a home where both your mum and dad were small business owners. Your dad a plumber, and
so yes, my dad was a plumber and had a plumbing firm that he grew over a number of years until ultimately he had a fairly major stroke in 2010, and that saw the end of his plumbing career and plumbing business. It was actually liquidated, which was quite unfortunate at the time and tough and. You know, a big life experience for me because I think I was 27 at the time and had to sign the form that put my dad's business into voluntary liquidation. So it was a pretty tough call to have to make while he was still in hospital. My mum worked in a range of different businesses. She worked for Warnock's and ultimately Hannah's when they bought Warnock's. And then she worked for Good Health Whanganui and worked in the health sector for a number of years before ultimately actually coming down here to Wellington and working in a range of government departments as a bit of a fixer and sorter outer of different activities, along with being my business partner in the businesses that we grew and developed together.
And so working backwards from the references to years in your maiden, you're not yet 40.
So I am 40.
You are 40.
I'm 41 next month in March. So
happy birthday for,
thank you.
For next month. But you're clearly a man in a hurry. The biggest dirt, or the worst thing I could find out about you in preparing for today, is that you were a young gnat in Whanganui at the age of 12. What lit that political fuse for you to want to become involved in such a strong, must-be social metropolitan organisation in the good town of city of Whanganui?
It was a great organisation in those days. We had the Honourable Peter Gresham was our Member of Parliament for Waitotra. It was the last... It was the end of the last first-past-the-post Parliament as we came into MMP in 1996 and started that campaign. And so what lit the fuse? I'd always been interested in politics. I remember asking my parents who they voted for, driving past Woolworths on Victoria Avenue in 1993 and them not wanting to tell me. And was, you know, always there and interested in the community and what was going on around New Zealand. That particular year, I had met Peter Gresham at a community event. The Prime Minister at the time, Jim Bolger, came to Whanganui to open the velodrome and some developments that they were undertaking at velodrome. That was just opposite where my dad had his plumbing firm. I found out he was over there. I wangled my way into the function, and the rest is history. I say to people, it's a little like Candace, my wife Candace, decided she would be a vet at 5. And, you know, she's a vet these days. And she knew what she wanted and she went out there and got it. And I think I've always known that my role was going to be in service. When I was a young gnat, I thought that was going to be a young gnat, go to university and come into parliament, a little bit like too many of the left do. But I actually went out following some good advice that I'd had from a few ministers at the time, to go out, get a real job, earn some money, understand what the world's about, and bring valuable experience into the House. And I feel like I've done that.
Yeah, it's hard to pigeonhole you. We'll come into your career in a moment, but you don't come across reading your CV as a typical political sycophant that, well, you know, to be frank, you know, in and around this place, both, I'll be offending half the building, but the, you know, half the staff and some of the MPs are, you know, political apparatchiks. To join a political movement at 12 and stay in it, I must admit, at 17 or 18, I joined the Greens. Did have a bit of a
look. Everyone makes mistakes, Jordan. Everyone makes mistakes.
So, what were you, as a teenager, interested in politics, and with either a burning desire or knowledge that one day you'd end up or want to end up in this place? What were you most wrong about, or what's been a view that's really changed as you've got older, had a career, and had kids?
Well, that's a tough one, Jordan. I think there was a lot of that I was wrong about as a teenager. I'm not sure how much of that I want to share with you today, though. But in terms of politically, I think there was a period where I went through thinking that big organisation in New Zealand could solve problems.
Big organisation,
you know, there was a whole journey around the Auckland super city. There were discussions around mega cities down here and in Wellington and other places. And I think one of the things I've definitely understood more and more, although it comes with a caveat and a challenge, is that the more we can do locally, the better for our local communities. You know, this localism, a focus on having local involvement in organisations and input into how we run things is really important. I do fear that that can be used a little bit much as a catch cry for why, for example, local government feel that they deserve a bigger portion of the pie than they're currently getting. And without getting into that discussion itself, I think what it's important for everyone to do, and I'll tie this back to being a teenager in a moment, but I think today what it's important for everyone to do, as I said in my maiden speech, is have respect for the dollars that are paid over in taxes and in rates. And I think as local government focus on the need for localism and look to government for how that occurs, they've got to be making sure they say no to things locally as well. I think funding has just gone on a run and it's creating a challenge there, as it has centrally under the last Labor government. So let me tie that back to being a teenager. I remember sitting around the dining room table and Dad would say things like, you know, I'd be better if I was just on the tools myself. And it stuck with me. You know, as a young 10-year-old, 11-year-old, that Dad was working hard. He wouldn't be home for dinner at 5 or 6 o'clock. Funnily enough, I was laughing the other day with my grandmother who came down for my maiden speech about the fact that there was one time that she raced across the city because Dad wasn't home at 7 o'clock at night. Mum was still at the hospital as the finance manager sorting out some, you know, challenge that they had. And no one was home with my brother and I. Sister wasn't born at that stage, so I would have been 8 or 9.
And you're the oldest.
Yep, I'm the eldest, and Aaron's 2 years younger than me. And she raced over because, you know, no one was home, but we'd made ourselves dinner and we had to sort things out. But what I remember is that sort of sense of, well, Dad would be better if he was just working for himself than trying to build a business, support people, doing what he could. And I just remember thinking, we've got to make sure we make it easy for people to do business, create opportunities for other people to be employed, and do the things that help us grow this country.
You said that your grandparents, I think you said all your great-grandparents were alive.
So when I was born, I had 7 of my 8 great-grandparents alive. I had some of my great-great-grandparents alive as well, but I didn't mention that in the speech given time constraints. And I learned a huge amount from them. The lessons that I took from my great-grandparents and my grandparents, but we're talking about my great-grandparents for a moment, included things like, I remember one day, and it's quite relevant given how much debt the Labor government has created for this country right now. I remember one day biking past my great-grandma's and popping in to see her, and I had to go into town to buy some feed for my axolotl. I had axolotls as a...
Of course you did.
As a
young
a,
Nat, 12-year-old with axolotl, was he not?
And I said to her, can I borrow 50 cents? Because I was short.
There's an irony in all of this I'm about to come to, but yes.
To borrow 50 cents, because I was short, as I say, for paying for this food. And she said, of course she would. And so she lent me the 50 cents and I went down and bought this food. And a couple of weeks later, she reminded me of this. And she sort of kept reminding me until I paid her back, because I said I would, and I did. And after I paid her back, she said, you know, Carl, if you'd asked me to give it to you, I would have. But you asked to borrow it. And so that meant you have to repay it. And that message has stayed with me. And I think sometimes we forget in New Zealand right now, we've had a government that has spent 6 years spending New Zealanders' money, borrowing that money to spend it, and forgetting that they've got to pay it back. And now, of course, you know, this government and this government caucus room is going to have to clean that up.
You're about to tell me that your debtclock.nz is your homepage or something like that.
I have looked at it on a number of occasions.
You've got a few plugs, so that's our one. Before we leave your grandparents, tell me about the magic man.
So the magic man is my grandfather, Ken. Ken Bates is the magic man, well known around Whanganui. He used to do all the kids' shows.
So plumber, and do that. Health professional, magician.
Yeah. So my mum is more an accountant.
Okay.
She was in health, but she is an accountant by trade, and you would say a professional manager these days. Dad was a plumber. My grandfather, a magician. My uncle is Zappo the magician. If you know Zappo the magician,
my knowledge of Whanganui magicians is limited.
Well, no,
I'm
he's more of a New Zealand magician. He was one of the balloon guys in the show last year that they had on TV3.
Yeah, okay, so, all right.
Those listeners with grandchildren or young children might know old Zappo. So, yeah, bit of magic in the family. Granddad always asked whether or not I would become a magician. You know,
well, no, you were the next best thing, a politician.
Well, exactly. He said I was magic with my words, not with my hands. So there you go.
Your Christmas parties must have been, as a kid, must have been the talk of the preschool. So you've got a part-time job at McDonald's, which seems to be a common theme among National Party MPs, it seems. But you didn't go to, you studied at Massey, but didn't go to Palmy and have the usual vague memories of first year in the hostels.
No, so I didn't. So at the end of sixth form, as it was then, showing my age a little bit, the end of sixth form, I had the opportunity to go straight to university because I'd done a couple of papers, bursary papers in sixth form and done all right in them. So I took that opportunity. I think I was one of two students from our sixth form year that went off to university, didn't do seventh form. Interesting fact about our family is no member of our family has yet finished high school.
And you weren't going to break it. So
I wasn't going to break it. And then went off to did my first year extramurally, working full-time at Massey. And was very involved that year in the United Nations Youth Association in New Zealand and got that really going.
So you really were full political nerd.
I was indeed. And went off then to Massey in my second year. And that was also when my governance career really started. So that sort of second year at Massey, I was at Massey. I was boarding, funnily enough, with the National Party chairperson for Palmerston North at the time. Started my governance career, got my first couple of directorships.
This is what I mean by
worked at McDonald's at the time.
I mean, a second year student, you've finally, you know, left the nest. Most kids are going out and discovering themselves, and you say it was a critical moment in your life and your maiden that you were appointed an independent director of an aged care facility.
Yeah.
How did you both put your hand up for something like that and get selected for something like that?
So it was a critical moment in the context that it ultimately determined the trajectory of my career. And I think that is a big part of the sort of thinking around that statement in my maiden. I applied for it. It was in the paper. And I had been involved in governance roles through the party, through the United Nations, and sort of was interested in the role boards played in organisations because coming from a family business background, we haven't really talked about my grandparents' businesses and great-grandparents, but we're all small businesses. There was this thing that existed in non-profits and in larger organisations and public organisations called boards of directors, and given that experience in National and the United Nations Youth Association, I wanted to explore that further and give back because, as I also said, I'd been quite involved with my great-grandparents at that stage. They had passed away, and I saw this as an opportunity to give back. So I applied for the role. Interestingly enough...
You don't ask, you don't get.
I didn't... Exactly. I didn't have my age, I don't think, in my CV. When they found
so you,
out...
So you turned up.
when they invited me for an interview, they sort of found out how old I was, and one of them made a fairly smart comment about my age, which I won't repeat on podcast. But my response to said smart comment was, well, membership of the board isn't just the waiting room for the facility. And I think with that comment, they thought, well, you can hold your own. And they recognised that I had some skill and ability. It wasn't, you know, I wasn't appointed for diversity of the board or anything like that. It was based on skill and ability, and they saw it as an opportunity to, I suppose, upskill me as well. And that was how they appointed me to the board.
So you finished, so you were working when you finished your, it wasn't a commerce degree, it was a Bachelor of Science in Accountancy.
No, so it was a Bachelor of Business Studies.
Yep. And it was a separate
focused in accountancy, yep. And then a graduate diploma in finance.
Oh, okay. Then
yeah, and then I went on to do my honours and got first class honours in accountancy.
And you became a CA before?
I did go on to become a CA. Again, an interesting sort of... I tend to do things differently and push the boundaries, which is interesting in this environment. When you're an entrepreneurial, running your business or leading your organisation, you have a little bit more leeway to influence things. But I decided I wasn't going to do the typical work for one of the big four, do audit and do my hours to become a chartered accountant through my direct...
Why not?
It just wasn't what I suppose, wanted to do, and it wasn't where my career was taking me. By this stage, I was a director of the New Zealand Council on Healthcare Standards.
Even that's unusual. Wasn't where my career was taking me. You were what, 21, 22? Mm. That is an odd... I've taken the road less travelled, but it wasn't its choice. I graduated after the GFC had hit New Zealand. The big accounting firms weren't hiring. I ended up going into law instead because that's where there was a job. You're saying that at that age, you deliberately... Because your grades were obviously good. You obviously had all this extracurricular stuff. Why did you reject the presumed job offers from the PwCs and Deloitte's?
So I specifically then got the opportunity to become the acting chief executive of Quality Health New Zealand and do the turnaround job. So that organisation was bankrupt.
At 22, Mr. Fixer.
At 22, and a year later we had $1 million cash in the bank. We turned the organisation around and we had all of the 19 of the 21 DHB members.
Good God, you should get into government.
Who weren't going to support the organisation for another year, back on track and back involved in that organisation, including the likes of Dr. Jan White, who at the stage was chief executive of Waikato DHB, and I had to, at 22, sit down with her and discuss why Waikato DHB should take, I think, about a 40% increase in their levy that we were going to charge them.
What is Quality Health
New Zealand was the accreditation and certification agency for all of the DHBs, or not all of them, 19 and the 21, a whole lot of the public and private healthcare providers, including aged care facilities, specialised care facilities, the like, physiotherapists, kaupapa Māori providers. So we were the major agency. It had been deregulated, which was part of the problem that the council had found in their revenue model. And I think, to be frank, I was given the opportunity because they thought I would be the guy to politely close it down. You know, it wasn't going to affect my career because I was a young guy, yeah. But I did the opposite and ultimately got recognised by the chief advisor to the Minister of Health, who was a Labour minister at the time, with a pretty interesting letter to the board saying I'd done a great job and it would be a challenge for them to appoint someone to replace me. But that opportunity, because I had to do my hours through the institute, I spoke to a local chartered accounting firm. They employed me. They contracted me out to run this organisation. Made sure I did the work that I needed to do. But it was different to the traditional path.
You've then that was the point you went to South Africa?
Not quite. So they asked me to stay on after I'd turned it around. I decided that I'd done my job there, and this interest in governance, the role of boards, and the role of boards as a high-performance tool in delivering outcomes for both public and private.
It doesn't sound like that had a high-performing board. I mean, you must have been providing the energy and leadership if you were employed to turn out the lights and you did a turnaround job.
So the chair of the board, who had come in and then brought me onto the board and then ultimately brought me in to do the turnaround, she led a turnaround in the board and the organisation. So at the time I was on the board, I think it was a good board and delivered well in terms of the journey they navigated through. But it also taught me a lot around the role of a board, and certainly also how sometimes as a chief executive, you don't like what your board's telling you you've got to do. And I remember having some good arguments with the chair of the board there about what she was asking me to do and why I didn't need to do it.
But unusual for a 22-year-old.
But it was great, and I learned from that. And then the sort of connection was understanding that our family businesses, if they understood the role of boards. So in other words, you don't see boards in private, particularly small and medium organisations. And I think that that's one of the challenges with private enterprise in New Zealand. We sort of think that because we're a baker, we know how to run a bakery. Mm. Because we're a plumber, we know how to run a plumbing firm. And, you know, many on the other side of the house think that because they're a politician, they know how to run a country. Doesn't work like that, right? So what we understood in terms of governance was that if we brought boards into an understanding that helped the average businessman and woman in this country, we would be able to facilitate better governance of particularly private companies and improve performance. And that was the transition I made after Quality Health New Zealand.
I want to come back to corporate governance, but quickly, you took off to...
To South Africa in sort of 2008. I got invited there to speak, a number of times, ended up doing the trip 15 times over 18 months, realised there was a big opportunity there because the Companies Act in South Africa, which is based on the New Zealand Companies Act, was in the process of being changed. My dad had a stroke. All sort of came together.
You needed an OE, by the sounds of that.
Needed an OE, I suppose, and needed to choose, because at that stage I was travelling around the world on a sort of monthly circuit, New Zealand, Australia, South Africa, UK and back.
And just by this stage you were just consulting? Or?
So we were building a business, training, developing and running boards of directors.
This is your mother at this
and
stage?
And myself, focused on, private family and listed businesses.
And in South Africa, I just love this, that here's the 12-year-old young Nat, owns the Oxalotl. We haven't mentioned sport at all, and I wonder if that's indicative that you weren't in the first 15. And yet you met Candace on Tinder. Somehow that...
Absolutely.
You obviously didn't mention the Oxalotl or political bent, right?
No, I did, and Candace will tell you. On our first date, I said to her, I'm ultimately one day going to go back to New Zealand, and I'm
keen
to get involved in politics. Yep. And so she knew the game rules right from the beginning.
And you came, and somebody got to you, 1-year-old and a 4-year-old, is that?
So, a 1-year-old and a 5-year-old, and so just started school. And we came back at the end of 2020, not because of COVID and any of that sort of context. We came back because I used to come back about sort of 4 times a year. I was on the board of a manufacturing business that had or has a manufacturing facility here in Wellington and in Auckland making tin cans, including tin cans for infant milk formula. So really understand the connection between on-farm performance and jobs in the cities. Mm. And, an important, I think, perspective for the likes of a mere provincial MP. But I used to come back regularly for that board. Obviously, with COVID, that wasn't able to occur. My mum was getting remarried, and the wedding had been postponed, and so we came back for the wedding. We decided we'd have 3 months here because, of the travel context at the time. And literally, as we arrived in New Zealand, it was very clear that when we left, we wouldn't be allowed back in for a while. And it was also very clear that Labor were running a mile with their majority that they'd won in the 2020 election, and that the economics were just not going to play out. the way that the Prime Minister was saying. You know, they were overspending, they were heating up the economy, interest rates were low, and it was going to come to a
crescendo. That isn't the conversation you have with your wife,
to
come back. Darling, not only am I going to bring you back to New Zealand, there's this beautiful place called Whanganui, and my family, before Hawke's Bay, Mum and Dad grew up in Whanganui, so I feel
great
I have a license.
Wonderful
to,
Whanganui.
I spent a lot of my childhood there with my Kauai Park?
Kauai Park, that's right.
But you not only come to New Zealand, you didn't pick the Remuera or Wanaka. You picked Whanganui. Why was that?
Well, Whanganui's home. I've had business interest in Whanganui right through
that
time
away. We haven't covered it yet.
My family were there.
You came back from running a billion-dollar company, family company, and not your family, but a billion-dollar company at that age from South Africa. You could have gone anywhere. Did you come back to Whanganui to stand as an MP?
So when we came back at the end of 2020, we weren't actually coming back permanently. So we were only coming back.
You tricked her.
Well, some would say that. It was while we were here that all of that, as I say, was clear around where the government was going. And I said to Candace, now's the time. And Candace said, I thought this was only going to happen in a few years' time. And I said, well, you know, Whanganui doesn't have a National Party MP. They had an electorate MP that wasn't delivering from what people were saying to me. And it was clear that we would need to have someone stand at the next election. It was clear that National needed to have some great candidates, which we had across the country, and we've seen that in the intake of backbenchers in 2023. And I said to Candace, now's the time. So while we were still here in New Zealand, we put the business on the market. I told my team over Zoom, guys, and guys, girls, everyone, we're putting the business on the market. I had a great team, so they were fully behind me, and they helped us get it ready and put it on the market and go through that journey. Candace packed up our house over Zoom. So we didn't go back at this point, packed up the house over Zoom. Candace got a job as a vet, took the government 6 months to give her a visa, which is crazy when, she's
married to a New Zealand citizen.
And has a Kiwi son, one that has a passport. And we're desperate for vets in the middle of a lockdown. It was nuts. Anyhow, she had got the job and then got the visa and got working and put everything into focusing on the 2023 election.
Just run me by. So the consultancy with your mum was working with boards on governance and the like.
So not a consultancy, a professional services
professional
firm.
Professional services
if you please.
Firm. Sorry. All right. And that's how you got into being appointed the independent chair of this big South African company. Quickly, what did it do?
So without going into too much details, it was a multi-generational family business, an African family.
But it was retail.
This one had some retail, it had some manufacturing, some quick service restaurants, so a range of things across the African continent, some in Asia and some in the UK. There was a different business that I chaired the board of, not quite as large, that had retail stores across southern Africa, particularly in the small towns, close to a lot of the townships, so in some of the most underprivileged areas, serving some of the most underprivileged in southern Africa, including doing things like selling nappies at cost so that the families could have what they needed available to them. And that was a great experience. During my 5 years as chair, we grew that from just over 50-odd stores to 170. And then in the middle of COVID, that business was sold to a listed company. So shows how when you understand what performance means, you can get things done.
You, at the same time, that would have read when you started writing your books, one of
yes.
them, Traversing the Avalanche, A Practical Guide to Implementation of Effective Governance for SME Growth. And in the synopsis of the other book, The Laws of Extreme Business Success, this is presumably the professional services firm with your mum, Serdar Global Group, leading international entrepreneur, speaker and mentor who is passionate about rapidly growing small to medium businesses and empowering communities through enterprise. I was going to ask you earlier when you talked about the chair who backed you when you were young for the turnaround job. What makes a good mentor in the business context?
So my experience of good mentors are people that are willing to engage and spend time with you and treat you as an equal, but at the same time are prepared to give you straight feedback and not sugarcoat it, and help you understand, and certainly Claire is the name of the chair, Claire Campbell. She helped me understand the journey I was going on, where I wasn't seeing it. Sometimes she would do it in a sort of forceful, probably not quite the right word, but this is what's happening, and I would learn the experience through actually doing it, and then afterwards would be a bit more of a debrief. And other times we would have quite long conversations, both in the office and outside of the office. And she invested time in me, as did her husband, and a name you might know, Duncan Milne. He was chair of the UCOL board, which I was on at the same time, and he invested time in me as well. And I credit a lot of my learning in the front of Traversing the Avalanche in the foreword. I credit my understanding of governance to that early mentorship.
What do you think the challenges are in a New Zealand corporate governance sphere? This is fresh in my head because when I was 27 and set up the Taxpayers Union, I was extremely fortunate with the series of chairs I've had over the 10 years. And I once overheard Barry Saunders be asked by actually my former mentor from Canada, what do you see your role as? And he described the role as chair in a group like this, a shoulder to cry on, someone to celebrate success with, a strategic sounding board, and someone to hold him to account. And I thought that encapsulates it so well, but I don't, you describe it in a slightly different way, but I don't see as much of that in the not-for-profit world in New Zealand as we'd like to think.
So I think what I was describing slightly more was a mentor as opposed to the chair and chief executive relationship, which I think is slightly different. The way I would describe it is fairly similar to what you've just said, in that I think a chair and chief executive, the chair should be the biggest advocate and the biggest critic of the chief executive, but should never create a surprise in the boardroom. So a lot of that discussion should happen in advance and vice versa.
And through the chair. Yeah.
A chief executive should never create surprise for the chair.
Your maiden speech gives almost no clue as to your views on moral issues. There's a touch there that you have a faith.
Yes.
Do you describe yourself as a conservative, or are you more libertarian, classical liberal?
It's a good question. And I think through, when I was in Young Nats, I was very involved in the sort of theory and the labour. Mm. As I went out into the world, I think I've become less focused on labels.
You're going to have to vote on things. You can't. It's not like running the taxpayers.
But that's a different.
You can't pick and choose what issues come before you.
Oh, agree. And no challenge there. But let me describe my approach to how I'm going to do that, because I think that that's what's more important. I don't see, as a member of Parliament, my personal views and approach to life being the way you walk into the House and vote. As a member of Parliament and as a representative, I think a large part of that is about going out and engaging and understanding the views of the community and taking that back in. But ultimately, I do have to make a call and I will have to vote. And when I do that, I'll be basing it on all of what I've just said, as well as recognising that the Wanganui electorate has voted for me to be their representative, and the value set that I live by.
That doesn't really answer the question. That's okay. We will we'll keep an eye on that. Carl, I'd love to talk to you more about you. I've totally passed over that you were Young Business Person of the Year in 2016 for Wellington Regional Business Excellence Awards. You were the youngest chartered fellow to the Institute of Directors. I want to talk to you about the politicisation of the IOD in New Zealand and the wokeness, and how Australia IOD has now gone to the air. We compare the British IOD run by a New Zealander and how solid and that's been pro-markets rather than just pro-commerce as it is on this side of the world. We'll have to pause that, but the key question is, as MP for Whanganui, what does success look like?
As MP for Whanganui, success looks like making sure people know that when they ring me up with a challenge, that I'm going to go into bat for them. Not always going to win and get a result, but really want to look to the Chester Burrows model, the Honourable Chester Burrows model, who obviously passed early last year, but was a big mentor for me politically and supported my nomination and campaign. And the way he engaged the community. And everyone knew that if there was a challenge in our electorate, you could get in touch with him and he'd do something about it. And hopefully, I've already had, out of the stocks straight away and got out and around the community, and people know that that's something that I'm doing and achieving already. But that's what I want people in Whanganui to say, is that when you get in touch with Carl's office, they deal with it. Don't always get the result, because that's just the way it works. But you know that they're going to have tried to their absolute best, and that Carl's going to have gone into bat for you.
Carl Bates, we've gone well over time. Thanks for joining Taxpayer Talk.
Thank you so much.
And good luck.
Good to see you, Jordan.